FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.
Welcome, and you are listening to the Financial Survival Network. I'm Kerry Lutz, January 3rd, 2018. Got to get used to saying that. It's tough. Well, hey, as always, be part of the show. Email us, kl@kerrylutz.com. I love getting your emails. I'm only about 25 behind right now, but I made a New Year's resolution to get much more up to date and respond faster. So thank you for your patience. Well, you've seen what's going on in Iran. What's going on in North Korea, other hotspots around the globe, Venezuela. I mean, there's so many, who can keep track of them all? Well, person you're about to hear from, it's been on the show before, Harlan Ullman. Harlan, you've written a book, Anatomy of Failure, Why America Loses Every War It Starts. And we're thrilled to have you back on.
My pleasure and happy new year.
And likewise. So we've got this thing going on in Iran. It appears to be spontaneous eruption of major discontent with the ruling Mullah theocracy, and it appears to be gaining strength. What is the proper role for the United States, if any, and what do you see happening here?
One of the problems, and I point this out in my book, the reason we fail is because we lack knowledge and understanding of situations in which we become engaged. And we really forget history with Iran and Persia. The history of Iran, which is very, very rich and goes back 5,000 years, but in the more modern times, for the past 100 or so years, has been one in which foreign powers have intervened, beginning with the British, the turn of the last century. During World War II, the British and the Russians invaded militarily. We overthrew the Mossadegh regime in 1950. And so the Iranians have a firm memory of the past. And so in this particular case, I think the more interference from the outside, ironically, the more damage it's going to do, because in a funny way, may turn many Iranians towards the government. The reason that they are unhappy is a fundamental cause of unhappiness in many places around the world, including the United States, and that is failed and failing government. When government does not deliver, people become fearful of the future. That fear turns into anger, and that anger becomes outrage. That's one of the reasons why Donald Trump was elected in 2016. And so you see sort of commonality between what's happening in Iran, the failure of government, and the people who are revolting because their way of life is endangered, their future is endangered, their savings have been eviscerated. And I think from our perspective, we ought to just speak softly. We ought to be encouraging. But I think the more we try to intervene to influence events, the more it's likely that it's going to backfire.
I kind of agree with you. And if you just tuned in, we're talking with Harlan Ullman and his book, Anatomy of Failure, Why America Loses Every War It Starts. So we seem to kind of be doing that, just really giving him a moral support, if you will, Trump tweeting. And there's no indication yet that that there's been any intervention by the United States or other powers. This really appears to have started spontaneously.
That's correct.
So
everything that I know, it's my Iranian friends, but there is going to be interference. We're going to be trying to messaging because the internet will be taken down. We're going to be looking for alternative ways. And as I said, that is a double-edged sword. I think it's in the best interest of all to let this thing work its way out. And we don't know what's going to happen. This could be 1979 when Khomeini came in and overthrew the Shah, or it could be 1956 in Eastern Europe where the Soviets put down the revolutions in Poland and Hungary. And at this stage, we simply do not know. And we need to realize that our ability to influence these events is very limited. And so we need to exercise some degree of caution, because the last thing we want to see in Iran is a bloodbath, no matter how much we may dislike the regime of the Ayatollahs, which indeed is autocratic, and one would hope it would be reversed fairly soon. But I'm afraid, given the fact that the Ayatollahs have control of the elements of power, the army, the Iranian Revolutionary Guard Corps, and the secret police, they are in a very, very strong position, or so it would seem.
Yeah, well, you know, the one thing is that a regime that acts with trepidation when they're under direct threat from the people generally is on its last leg.
One hopes.
Yeah. You know, I'm just looking at a headline here that the head of the Iran Guards announces end of the sedition, and don't know, you know, he's claiming that only 15,000 people had taken part nationwide, which doesn't seem credible. You know, it's kind of like if they act to try to crush it, it could have the opposite effect.
Absolutely. And I think what we do not know is that there probably are a significant number, and I don't know what that number is, in the Army, in the IRGC, who actually have feelings that are much, much closer to the people who are very unhappy simply because they appreciate what's happening. So there may be some kind of a schism being created. But I think for the short and long term, the best policy for the United States to pursue in other countries is to take the moral high ground. But I think any active interference on our part strikes me as going to be more counterproductive than it is going to be helpful.
And there's no indication that we're actually going to get actively involved there.
Well, I think really, the State Department is. I would bet the CIA are. I'm sure that we are trying to establish lines of communication. I think that that's natural. That's what governments do. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. But we just need to exercise caution when we do that.
Yeah. Well, yeah, some involvement, but I don't think we're sending in troops.
That's not going to happen. That's not going to happen. Yeah. But, you know, the president could tweet something crazy, and that could blow up in our faces. I mean, the fact that he tweeted about North Korea, a topic you want to discuss, saying that the button on his desk is bigger than Kim Jong-un's button, in many ways is absurd, because, first of all, there is no button on the president's desk.
Yeah.
For openers.
Right.
If he were to become engaged and think seriously about any kind of a nuclear option, there's the so-called football, which is a list of codes which would be transmitted to the Secretary of Defense, who would then transmit them in turn to the Commander of Strategic Command, who's in charge of our nuclear forces. So the notion of a button that anybody can push is just nonsensical.
Well,
one can understand why, you know, you want to try to humiliate Kim Jong-un. But the fact of the matter is, this is an interesting opening. And I think the fact that Kim wore a suit and tie in Western appearance was a real signal rather than his Mao suit. Mm-hmm. And I think that there's an opportunity here for diplomacy. And I think what Kim says, we believe, or at least some people do, that he's irrational. He's not. He believes the United States is actively after regime change, and he believes, and I've argued this for some time, once he feels confident that he has a nuclear deterrent to make sure the United States never invades, which we're not prepared to do, he's prepared to negotiate. And I think that's what the offering is. And for us to say, well, we will boycott the Winter Olympics if North Korea shows up, seems to me to be very, very foolish, because the last thing we want is to increase the opportunity for hostilities on the peninsula. And if there is an opening, we pursue it. And if it turns out that Kim is just playing a false game, that strengthens us when we want to go back to the UN for future embargoes and sanctions on him. So at this stage, I hope the administration exercises more common sense. But this is an opening that needs to be exploited, and let the two Koreas get on with it.
Yeah. And so you're somewhat guardedly optimistic over...
No, I'm not optimistic or pessimistic, Kerry. I think that this is an opportunity that presents itself. We'll see how it works out. I agree with the president's tweet when he says perhaps it may or perhaps it may not. But this is not something that we should close down, because it is one of the few openings that may in fact lead to something. But I wouldn't be optimistic or pessimistic. I would be guarded.
So is Kim Jong-un feeling the pain from the sanctions and from the...
No. No, he's not. His people are.
Yeah, well.
The same thing happened with Saddam Hussein. Saddam Hussein was not suffering anything, but the Iraqi people were. The issue here has been, and I've said this for some time, when Kim gets to a point where he believes he has a sufficient nuclear deterrent, and he's probably there now, the Chinese will intervene. And the reason I say that, I mean intervene diplomatically and politically. On the one hand, China is not concerned with North Korea having a nuclear weapon, because that makes life much more difficult for the United States. On the other hand, they don't want Kim to go up half-cocked. So I think at this stage, they will appreciate that Kim is perhaps where he feels he should be to be more secure. And at that stage, I think China and even Russia can engage more. And I think that there is an opportunity for some kind of a negotiation. The first step would be a peace conference. But we still have a truce, an armistice that took place in 1953. Right. So I think that there are ways here. If we think that Kim is going to denuclearize, and that's the only outcome we will accept, then we're playing a fool's game because that will never happen. But in terms of limiting his program, perhaps even getting IAEA, International Atomic Energy advisors, inspectors in, is indeed within the realm of possibility. But I think we need to push negotiations. This is an opening, very much like Richard Nixon pursued ping pong diplomacy with China in the early 1970s that led to the great China opening. And nobody thought that was possible because China was viewed much more of an enemy then than North Korea is today.
Interesting analogy. Hope you're right. Well, I guess we're going to find
out. We'll see. We'll find out.
Hey, what about what's happening in Venezuela? Those people seem to be at wit's end.
Well, it's not just Venezuela. I mean, you take a look at huge swaths in Africa, what's happening in Somalia, what's happening in Yemen. This is a complete failure of government. I mean, that's the one issue I think that is the most dangerous threat to mankind. And so whether it's Venezuela where people are suffering because of the incompetence of the regime, or in Somalia or in Yemen or wherever, the fact is that government is not providing what needs to be done. And the people who suffer are the people who are being governed. They're suffering from, in this case, disease and some cases, extreme versions of poverty and starvation. And unfortunately, there's very little one can do about it because you simply don't have the resources to go in, change the regimes, and then stay for 50 years to sort countries out. It's the downsides of humanity. Some places, obviously, are very, very stable places to live. Europe, much of North America, parts of Asia, but other parts of the world are indeed very, very violent, troubled places. And there's no way that over the short term, we're going to be able to rectify all that, no matter how much we would like to do so. But unfortunately, it's the nature of life, and it has been for some time.
Well, interesting development happened last year that in all these retrospectives on television, I didn't see one of them mentioned in Harlan, and that was the coup against Mugabe, who is the longest serving dictator.
Serving dictator. Yeah, because we don't know where Africa is.
Yeah, well,
you know, it's not called the Dark Continent for nothing.
Yeah. But that was pretty, I think that was a major milestone.
I agree.
And I think a lot more are going to fail or fall as a result of it because if Mugabe's gone, right?
But you know, you take a country like Nigeria with unbelievable oil resources, and yet the poverty is extreme. Boko Haram is a terrorist group. Mm. The government is incapable. And so you've got huge swaths of Africa that are simply ungovernable. And it's been a tremendous contradiction and dilemma because the resources are there. Africa is certainly not resource poor. And yet, because of colonization and the fact that Africa has always been, as I said, the least known continent, always out of public view, we have all these terrible humanitarian issues. I mean, think about in the 1990s with Rwanda, when over 500,000 people were killed, the Hutus versus the Tutsis, the Tutus. And so this is a fact of life. It's one that one tries to minimize. But as I said, we do not have the resources to be able to fix all the global problems we have, let alone the problems we have at home.
Yeah. Well, you know, being the world's policeman doesn't really work. We've seen that.
It's a mug game. It's a mug's game, and we're not the world's policeman. I don't think that we ever were. But we have to realize that our resources are limited. We have to depend far more on allies and other groups to do the best we can to make marginal improvements where we can. But there's not going to be a major revolution when we all wake up tomorrow and this is going to be a democratic world filled with liberal values in which everybody has a great standard of living. That simply is not going to happen.
Yeah, well, all the gains in humanity are incremental over time, right? Some countries really explode onto the scene and really become, you know, advanced literally overnight, like China, but others take decades to reach. Hey, so you want to take a look at the book by Harlan Ullman, Anatomy of Failure, Why America Loses Every War It Starts. And Dr. Ullman, thanks for coming on. Just tell us where we find out more about you and the book on the web.
Go to the web, and I'm very, very well named, well known. I've just had the pleasure and the honor of being named at the U.S. Naval War College in Newport, Rhode Island, its first Distinguished Senior Fellow and Visiting Professor. The book is best available on Amazon. You can get the best prices. And it's probably one of the few books in which General Colin Powell and Secretary of State Senator John Kerry call it a must-read. And for those of you who followed the great series House of Cards before it was interrupted, the original creator of House of Cards, Lord Michael Dobbs, an Englishman, has called my book a combination of a Tom Clancy thriller because of all the vignettes in it and personal experiences, and a book worthy of Clausewitz in terms of strategic thinking, which is a tremendously humbling statement to make. But I think if people get the book and read it, you will see not just the history of the past president since Jack Kennedy and how we use force well and how we used it badly, but it's also filled with interesting vignettes from my experiences going back more than 50 years, beginning when I was preparing to go to Vietnam in 1965, undergoing survival escape and evasion school in the mountains of Warner Springs in California, where the biggest problem was frostbite, saying to myself, when is the last time or first time there was a case of frostbite in Vietnam? Probably not since the ice ages. Yeah. And really, from that day, I began questioning a lot of decisions that we have made. And the book is really the result of that some 50 years later.
Hey, well, good work. And your website, we find you at Harlan Ullman, HARLANULLMAN.net. And
and better than that, Kerry, if you go to, I can be tweeted at Harlan K. Ullman, where I've got a pretty active following.
Excellent. And hey, send us an email, questions, comments, be part of the show. Twitter feeds at Kerry Lutz, Facebook page Financial Survival Network. Don't forget, sign up for our newsletter. And hey, Dr. Ullman, thanks so much for coming on.
Kerry, Happy New Year. Thank you for having me again.
FSN Radio. It's all about what's next. Go to financialsurvivalnetwork.com and sign up for your free weekly newsletter. You'll also get three free reports. The Financial Survival Network. It's all about what's next.